Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 186, featuring Grant Miller from Ingenuity Studios. Lon, you and I have a lot to talk about, but before we get into it, let's talk about Grant and Ingenuity Studios. He came in just before SIGGRAPH with us, right?
Yep.
And recorded a podcast. We've wanted to talk to him for a while. One of the things that he has been doing, amongst many amazing things that the company is doing, and you'll hear in a podcast, is been a big proponent of V-Ray for Nuke, right?
And V-Ray for Houdini.
And V-Ray for Houdini.
Yeah.
Yeah. Houdini specifically has been a big one, right?
Yeah.
I have wanted to talk to him about it and see, talk about his experience and find out why he's using it, et cetera. But it's a big deal for us. And it was a really cool to have him around. And one of the reasons I wanted to put this podcast out is we're changing our a little bit about V-Ray for Houdini. We're changing a few things, which we announced at SIGGRAPH.
Yeah, so we announced that it's officially in beta.
Yeah.
So anybody can sign up and check it out.
Now, what if people are going to say, well, it's been in beta for a while. It's been different, right?
Well, so when we first started the project, we had made it open access on GitHub.
Right.
And, you know, we did that because there were studios that wanted to look at it, but we weren't quite ready to turn it into a full-fledged product.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that, you know, some folks like Grant had done an amazing job of just grabbing it on GitHub. But it is a little bit of a pain in the ass when you have to compile your own software and all of that. And so we said, okay, we're going to turn this into a full-fledged product. And part of that was, you know, from studio visits, people wanted, you know, were asking about completing their pipeline.
Right.
They wanted to sort of like, that was the last piece of the puzzle that they felt like they needed to kind of move assets around between whichever application they were doing things in.
Right.
And Grant does an amazing job on the podcast of talking about how exactly they do that and some cool things that they pulled off.
Right.
So it's pretty exciting to do that. Plus we're, you know, now GPU is a big part of the equation there.
Yep.
And, you know, we always talk about how GPU does a very nice job at rendering volumes very fast.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool. So yeah, we definitely encourage anybody to check that out.
Yeah, and he's been using it for a while. Obviously, Ingenuity Studio is a very interesting studio. He sort of noted that he feels that company has grown in the same way that we've grown, and they're doing some really interesting work. Many of you guys may have seen a lot of the projects. They've worked very closely with Taylor Swift and do a lot of her music videos.
Yeah, odds are, if you've seen a Taylor Swift video at any time, you've seen their work.
Uh-huh.
You know. And one of the things that we joked around with Andre, the lead developer of V-Ray for Houdini, is he said, how does it feel like, you know, one of the first major uses of something you created has 980 million hits on YouTube?
Right. So, yeah. So it's really cool to talk to Grant about that. And he's a really, really nice guy. And I feel that we're going to do a lot of cool stuff together. But let's, you mentioned V-Ray for Houdini sort of going into official beta at SIGGRAPH. What are some of the other big announcements we did? Because you and I just got back like a few days ago.
So. Yeah, so we just got back from SIGGRAPH and we're already starting to prep for SIGGRAPH 2019.
Right.
So another big announcement we had at SIGGRAPH this year was we've opened up our V-Ray Cloud beta. And now that is open to anybody to give it a try. You know, our aim is to make it the world's simplest cloud renderer out there. And so we were offering free cloud rendering for a limited time while mm-hmm. it's in beta for people to test it out, check it out, give us feedback, you know. So it's a perfect opportunity if there's some stuff that you've wanted to render for a while and didn't have, you know, the horsepower to do it.
Right.
Give it a shot. Or if you had a passion project like a short film or something like that that you wanted to push through, perfect opportunity.
We can make that happen. Now, just so people are clear, they're going to ask, well, how much is it going to cost? So what we're really doing is getting people to try it and use it and find out how they use it and see how easy it is to use. We have been blessed with being able to get a ton of credits that we can give people.
Yeah. So so right now through the beta, it's something that we're offering free. The entire V-Ray Cloud is built on the Google Cloud Platform
yep.
infrastructure. So, I mean, that's rock solid. It's an amazing place to house that. And
it's also extremely secure.
Yeah, so it's a good opportunity.
But I also think that, you know, people are going to say, you know, what's the pricing going to be? And it's like, well, that's to be determined, yeah, but we can say it's going to be competitive.
Yeah, we've certainly got to figure that out. And we've got ideas and so on, but we've got to run through the usage statistics and all that to make sure that everything is working. The one thing that I was saying is, you know, our goal of making it the world's simplest and easiest cloud rendering means that we can't have the world's most complicated billing.
No.
So we're also looking at ways to make sure that that's an easy.
And that's been our goal specifically, is to make it simple, simple, simple for people to use, right?
Yep, for
it's
sure.
It literally is going to start with a button on the interface. It just sends it to the cloud.
Yeah, it is the lamest demo ever because you hit a button and it just does what it says it does. So when I was meeting with press, I would joke, it's like if I walked you over to the copy machine and I hit the button and made a copy, you know, like, ta-da.
Yeah, it is literally that, like that. You want two copies or one copy?
Right.
So it's, you want an enlarge or
now I'm
going to
download it.
Yeah, but it is really, really fast and it's really simple and it's amazing how it works. And I highly encourage you guys to try it out and get that going on. Now we have a few other announcements. Obviously, yep. V-Ray for Maya beta is also out.
Yep, there's a new beta 2 for V-Ray for Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got some great stuff, some really, check out the IPR now in it and check out GPU rendering in V-Ray for Maya. Both of those have come, a long way and are totally ready for some new stuff.
Sure.
And then there's also a brand new Toon Shader that's got a lot of really cool controls.
Looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
Yeah. And one last thing, obviously, and the big thing is RTX, right? So we've been working on RTX technology for over a year.
Yeah, I mean, we've been working on the RTX. So it's a little challenging right now because there's so many acronyms that are getting thrown around and they're different pieces of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been working on RTX, which is kind of the software component.
Mm-hmm.
And then what NVIDIA announced on Monday of SIGGRAPH is they announced their new hardware,
mm-hmm.
which has RT cores,
mm-hmm.
and those are specifically added to speed up ray tracing.
Right.
And so obviously anything that has to do with ray tracing is something that we're ecstatic about.
Sure.
And so we've been working very closely on seeing where we can utilize that new hardware and the software stack so that we can do some amazing things.
Right.
And we put together and launched a demo, mm-hmm. Very early demo, but it's literally was one of those things where it was like, the word Holy Grail gets thrown around a lot or mm-hmm. was thrown around a lot this last week, but I'm glad we also threw it around
mm-hmm.
because we were able to showcase real-time ray tracing of a massive, absolutely incredibly massive scene. It had over 300 billion over 300 billion triangles.
Right.
So not possible in a game engine. Just isn't going to run.
Right.
We showed that rendering in real time, anywhere from 24 to 40 frames a second.
Right.
And
on a single GPU.
On a single GPU. And it was literally taking a scene that was created, in this case, I think it was V-Ray for Max, exporting it as a VR scene file, V-Ray scene file,
mm-hmm.
and importing it into a new project, which is Lavina,
mm-hmm.
and which is kind of cool. That means avalanche in Bulgarian.
Right.
So,
but this was real. This was full ray tracing.
Full ray tracing.
This is not a hybrid ray tracing.
No raster graphics whatsoever.
Right. Some of the other things you've seen, which look really nice, are a hybrid where they add a reflection on top or a little ambient occlusion on top. But it's based on rasterization. This is fully ray traced.
Yeah, and so there's no reason why, the stuff that we're doing couldn't be added on top of a rasterized solution as well. But the reason that we want to go full ray tracing entirely, besides being a ray tracing company,
mm-hmm.
It cuts out all of the problems that you have trying to go to a raster engine.
Yeah.
So you don't need to optimize your geometry. You don't need to, care about your UV maps and stuff like that for light baking and all of it. You can literally take a scene, and we were doing this over the weekend. We were just like, let's open up this EverMotion scene and bring it into Lavina, and we were walking around in real time.
Right.
Ray traced.
Right.
with ray traced reflections, with ray traced refractions,
mm-hmm.
with a bounce of global illumination, with ray traced shadows.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And ray tracing actually is interesting because I'm going to talk about it with Vlado. Obviously, we're going to do a few more things about it. Ray tracing has advantages, technically looks more accurate, et cetera, but it actually has advantages fundamentally in the under the hood above rasterization because it doesn't, it allows you to load a lot more geometry.
Yeah.
You can do a lot more geometry. You can do a lot of things that you can't necessarily do in scanline rendering. So it was very, very interesting. So Project Lavina was a big one for us. And this is brand new. We're just starting to scratch the surface of it and showing that surface. But we're also bringing in some of the other RTX technology into GPU as well.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. So we want to make sure that people know that this doesn't mean that V-Ray GPU is going away and it's being replaced by
No.
It's a different thing, yeah. Right?
And you know, as a matter of fact, they could work very well together, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But V-Ray GPU is always going to be headed towards making that a full-fledged production render,
yep,
with everything you need to do to render massive scenes and all of that.
Right.
And Lavina is always going to be a real-time ray tracer.
Right.
So frame rate is the goal there.
Right.
And ideally, anything that we can do to get into that 90 frames a second,
mm-hmm,
so that we can do VR.
Yeah.
And full ray trace VR.
Right.
And so that, you know, they would make an ecosystem that works very well together.
Yeah.
But imagine if your viewport was always fully ray traced
all the time. Yeah. So there was some really interesting stuff that we did. I'm very, very, you know, congratulations to the team in Bulgaria, all the developers who sort of managed to pull a rabbit out of the hat.
Oh yeah,
it's amazing.
Some crazy late nights and
because we didn't get some of this hardware till like a week or two before, right?
You know, really kind of didn't exist.
Yeah.
And so yeah, kudos to all the folks that worked on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the work shows, and this is really just the beginning.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
I do see this as the moment where people are gonna go back to that time in 2018 where real-time ray tracing started to become a reality.
Yeah, it's an inflection point for sure.
So this is going to be that time. And we will remember 2018 as that year that real-time ray tracing was a real thing. All right, Lon, thanks for that. Sorry for the long intro, but I think our audience is interested in a bit of a rundown. By the way, speaking of our audience, I want to thank all the people that came up to me at SIGGRAPH and were talking about the podcast. It was kind of humbling to hear all those people that really enjoyed it. In fact, there was one guy who complained about the fact that I didn't release one the week before, but I'm sorry, I was on vacation.
You were literally in the middle of a stream somewhere in Montana.
I was fly fishing, but yeah, it's been really great. And I really appreciate the audience that's out there that's come along to see V-Ray Days and they were able to see you guys at SIGGRAPH. And it's been really humbling to hear that you guys really enjoy the podcast. So thank you so much. This has been really great. Without further ado, let's bring you Grant Miller from Ingenuity Studios. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
And how big is Bulgaria?
Because Bulgaria is
are huge.
300?
Over there.
The size of Wisconsin?
No. No.
300.
Our Bulgarian office is about 300.
300. People. Where actually the movie The 300 was also shot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Somewhere in Bulgaria.
Might have been. But it's we're on three floors now.
It's crazy.
Three full floors.
Yeah. 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 I started 7 years ago now.
Yep.
And we were just at about 100 people.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like when we started out, it feels like we've kind of grown with you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
like
cool.
You're like, and it's like, oh, we're like, cause we're 100 people now. And we were, you know, 8 years ago, we were 6 guys.
Yeah.
Know?
Right.
So,
oh, that's awesome.
It's like, we've kind of seen, like, I feel like you guys are getting a bigger, more professional company, and like, it's, you know, it's kind of the same, with the same growing pains.
Well, that's good. Cause that's my job.
Keep it up
to make everyone think that
we're a big professional company.
We are, and we're still the friendly people down the street.
A little bit of it is fake it till you make it. Yeah. I think across the I feel like there's a guy at Apple probably who's like, I'm trying to make us look like a big professional company. It's like,
that's a good analogy.
Yeah,
we're not exactly Apple,
but I was just thinking that we definitely got to get you to Bulgaria for Total Chaos next year.
Yeah.
Because
love to come.
We got to get you to present all of the awesome stuff that you're working on and give you an opportunity to check out Bulgaria, like see headquarters.
Yeah.
That's the best time to come. That's like the weather is good.
I've been sending cookies for years.
Oh, and by the way, it was even on my to-do list today from Chris. I'm like, remind me to tell Grant, thank you for the cookies. Because that is like one of the best things ever that happens at the holidays.
Yeah, he was like, oh, it's cookie time.
And you know, it comes with a big thing of milk that's in the glass jug, right? Yeah. Which is a nice touch.
Yeah, of course.
And
I mean, it's, you know, I say, hey, Annie, we should get the Chaos Group guys cookies. And she does a really good job of being very nice.
It's amazing. It's super appreciated. I don't think they last longer than an afternoon.
No, they don't. No. Shocking. The milk will never go bad, for sure. But it is interesting because you guys have been, you know, friends of ours for a long time and have been pushing this thing that I think we're going to talk about a little bit. This is our Houdini thing. For years, since as long almost as V-Ray has been around, or like, oh, you're going to make V-Ray for Maya. When are you going to make it for Houdini, right? And it's been a problem for us because we couldn't quite figure out how and what was important about that process and the challenges of it and whether the investment and time to make that work was going to pay off for us. Because, you know, if we make V-Ray for, you know, Houdini, who knows how many licenses we're going to sell? But that wasn't really the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first conversations I remember having about it was like, well, Mantra's a pretty darn good renderer that's in it, right? And it works with everything natively.
It does work very natively.
Right,
natively. That's the best part about it.
And so that was always the impression. And so, you know, what do you need that's not there? But the reality was is everybody wants to connect their people's pipelines now are coming from everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
Like you're getting pieces there's no longer like we just work in one package, right? Everybody is
well,
like,
what was the one of the DD Houdini guys who says, I love Maya. It's the plugin I use to use V-Ray. Right?
Yeah.
Because they are putting all this stuff out of you know, Houdini and then trying to figure out how to render it in V-Ray. But but when we first did it, Vlado's idea was, well, the Houdini guys are really techie guys.
Yeah.
So we'll just make it a GitHub project, right? And you guys can access V-Ray for Houdini, but you have to compile it yourself.
Yeah. By the way, I had to ask what that meant.
Very tall order.
Yeah.
I think one of my first posts on the beta forum on GitHub was like, I want to help you guys. I don't know how.
Yeah, give me.
And I'm pretty like, I'm okay. You know what I mean? I'm not, I'm no slouch. I can get around. I maybe wrote a lot of our whole pipeline, you know, right. I don't have any idea how to accomplish this.
Right. So, but I think part of the other challenge is that Houdini updates itself constantly too. You can always get nightly builds of Houdini.
Yeah.
Right? So you would technically have to recompile V-Ray for Houdini every time, right?
All the time.
So that was a challenge, but...
And you want those builds too. Like that's the rub is that the Houdini guys really do a good job of, you know, they're in the kind of Chaos Group vein in terms of just like, oh, we're going to update our stuff and we're going to, you know, give you guys the new versions you need and fix the bug that you have instead of on the kind of, well, you don't care.
Right.
Which is some other software companies.
Some other company. Yeah. No, they literally give you a bug fix all the time. But it became this thing and then you guys started using it, right?
Yeah.
And probably one of the studios that really gave us the best input on a lot of the stuff. Because I know Andre, he knows you pretty well online at this point, right?
Yeah. I have his, I think, personal email. Yeah. Like I post on the, you know, on the issues thing just to act like a professional. But
yeah.
If I get a real like pinch, I'm like, hey, I need this now.
Yeah, the bat signal.
Yeah.
So that's actually an interesting. So if you ever do come to Total Chaos, you will be meeting Andre.
Absolutely.
Who I call Russian Andre because he's Russian. But
we have French Sarah at our work, so yeah. I get it. I'm with you. She's from Boston.
Let me ask you this, Grant. How's your pool skills?
My pool skills?
Yeah.
They're all right.
Okay, because Andre is...
He's really, a pretty serious billiard player.
Pretty serious. Pretty serious. His girlfriend is actually a world-class snooker referee.
They're not that serious.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'll maybe break, and then he can do the rest of the balls.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's fine.
And we'll be on the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'll look like a champion. Yeah. And, you know.
He's pretty awesome.
It's a good way to go.
Bulgaria will be really nice.
Yeah. He's a really, really great guy. Great sense of humor. He was one of the first guys. He's always put V-Ray into different things. I think he was one of the guys who put V-Ray into Blender, right?
Yeah. No, he wrote V-Ray for Blender.
It's funny that it's Blender for V-Ray. It's not like
right.
V-Ray.
It has to be. Because
of Blender being an open source.
Blender being an open source, we have to make our own version of V-Ray that compiles to Blender.
Yeah.
It's the only way it works.
Yeah, it's a little workaround.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny how that, it is. You know, you're like, this is backwards.
Yeah. But what is the motivation for you to use V-Ray for Houdini? What was the big driving force there?
Oh, it's so many things. It solves like a ton of problems. There's no great, so we do a ton of instancing and just in all of the work that we do, and everyone else really has, you know, like these bigger studios, they have, you know, a specific instancing pipeline and tools and like custom plugins that they've written that are, you know, sending data down the chain to the shaders and doing all of this kind of stuff that we don't have the dev team to do, and we don't have, you know, that stuff kind of already in place.
Right.
And you can do all of that in Houdini. So like our crowd system in Houdini, everyone has a unique shirt. Everyone has a different, you know, color on their, you know, different accent colors, different whatever. And, you know, you look at the mantra render of that and it looks okay and it's fine. But if you have V-Ray in there and still have access to all of that stuff, I mean, you get a real human. Like we can just put, you know, we can put the actual V-Ray skin shader on people. Like you can get actual hair shaders on people. And then suddenly you can get 10 feet from a CG crowd person and not know the difference. You know, you're like, oh, that's my mom back there, you know, but it's really not, you know, so that's a big factor for us. You know, we came from 3D Studio Max and leaned a lot on Forestback back in the day to kind of bridge that gap, but it's a really kind of awkward way to, you know, do spaceships in a city with a plugin that's meant to make trees on the ground.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like just, and that's really the thing that's the biggest thing that Houdini solves on, you know, and V-Ray for Houdini kind of allowing us to do really big instance heavy scenes. And that was really one of the first, you know, kind of things that we worked with you guys on in terms of kind of implementation. You know, it's like, I want scales on these snakes and I want those scales to be, you know, individual actual scales and they're all instanced and they come along for the ride and, you know, you can accomplish that. Whereas
I never even thought about that in the snake shot. So I guess everybody needs to know the shots you're referring to because they can't see it.
But yeah, we did.
I thought that was a texture.
No, like, we did.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we did individual. So we did Taylor Swift's Look What You Made Me Do video. And the snakes in there have individual scales because they're very hero. And every time we've tried in the past to do, you know, vector displacement with it or regular displacement, and it just looks like a rubber snake.
And you never get the edge perfect. Right?
Yeah, the edge never goes under. Right. It's you know, and then when the snake spreads or curls or whatever, those scales separate.
Yep, they shift around. Yep.
We did a fantastic, myself and one of our effects artists, Paul, kind of worked out the spreading of that and like the sticking of the, you know, scales on the skin, but we needed a way to render them with, you know, kind of more shading than we could do in Mantra, mm-hmm. or than we have experience doing in Mantra. Because it's, you know, I think you can get good results out of it, but everyone in our studio has used V-Ray for the last decade, and no one has ever shaded a snake in Mantra, you know? So it was like, we should just do this in V-Ray for Houdini. They just released it last week. Let's just use it on this job that we're doing right now.
Yeah. but isn't it also that, you know, you render some stuff in Maya and you render some stuff, you can solve things in Maya and you can solve things in Houdini, and you rent, but if you render V-Ray for Maya and Mantra and Houdini, then it's never going
to
look.
No, exactly. Right? It's never apples to apples, and you can't get
the lighting to match.
And you can't transfer anything back and forth either. I mean, you know, the V-Ray scene manager now in Maya is fantastic. So you can dump a V-Ray scene even out of Houdini and then pull it over, render it in Maya, you know, instance it around, have 20 of them, you know, so it just allows this flexibility in terms of like what a published asset is. That's, you know, I think it's really an actual thing that you can go put on the screen instead of, here's an Alembic file, here's some textures, here's, you know, maybe you're publishing out the shader in some proprietary format or whatever, but it's like, it's still not screen, it's not camera ready. Whereas, you know, you publish a V-Ray scene of something, it's ready to roll, you know? Right. And I think that's really the difference in the connectivity, you know, it's that caching step and then, you know, kind of the retweaking of everything and the resetting up of everything. You kind of skip that entirely.
So it really solved a big pipeline thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're no longer kind of looking to how do we recreate this in, you know, one application or the other. You just have a format that you can move around, you know?
Yeah. That's,
and that you're comfortable with. And
I mean, that was a vision that we had when we started looking at transferring VR scene files, that people would do that. So
yeah,
it makes total sense.
Yeah. And then you can look dev wherever you're comfortable. Like if you want to, you know, if you have an artist that wants to do that look dev in Maya and they're familiar with the shading networks in Maya and whatever, they can. And then we can send that asset over to Houdini and still have the ability to have a thousand of them in, you know, scattered around a city, because all the look dev is done. And you know that tree is going to be a tree, and, you know, you don't have to kind of worry about that aspect of it.
By the way, I was joking with Andre. I said, how do you feel about, you know, this first, because we showed him the video, the Taylor Swift video. And, and we said, how does it feel like to know this thing that you created, the first major use, has almost 1 billion views on YouTube?
Yeah.
We tend to really like lean into stuff. I don't know why. It's really like dumb in hindsight always, but we're just like, oh, they really like it. Literally, I think it was out for, you know, a month or two when we had really kind of started like exploring. I'm like, yeah, we'll just use this on this job. It'll be fine. And it was, but like Andre was fixing, you know, 3 days before, like we had to render the, you know, like making tweaks, and I'm like, I need this now, you know, but it was, I mean, everyone on the team was great in terms of kind of helping us get it across the finish line. And I think it helps kind of push that stuff forward. You know, it's like, and now, you know, that snake scene, the export times when we started were 15 minutes and they're now, you know, 15 seconds, you know what I mean? And so it's like, it's crazy even to think about the build of it that we used then versus what now it would just be child's play. You know what I mean? Like we'd have, it was really interesting.
So it, because of this, and because we've actually saw it being used and actually, you know, in something very big in a major production, I think that was enough to motivate Flato. It's like, well, let's just make this official beta product.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, when we visit studios, we hear it often enough where they say like, well,
so many times
we just want to connect all the dots, like you guys are connecting, right?
Yeah,
like we want to really be able to do all of this stuff in under one thing in our pipe. And I mean, the same even goes for the stuff that we're talking about, V-Ray for Nuke, right?
Like
it's sort of, there are perfect opportunities to take something that you created, looked at in Maya or whatever, bring it into Nuke and drop that into your comp and get some ray trace render out of it.
Yeah, I mean, signs for buildings, like it seems like a trivial thing, but you know, we do a lot of half hour comedy in a big part of that is just, oh, we need a, you know, cute, funny sign on this thing. Vray for Nuke for that all day long.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it's,
you just put some geo and you render it with good lighting and
And you have a real shadow pass and you have like a real, you know, it's you have real GI bounce onto, you know, you have all this stuff.
And it's already in the comping package.
Yeah, exactly. And you, if you want to make that, you know, the client comes back and says, hey, we can get the sign a little smaller, you scale it down a little bit and re-render, you know, it's not like, oh, I need to go back to CG and then CG needs to put that on the file. You know, it's just done.
Right.
You know, and that's another one that's seen a ton of improvement over the last, you know, 6 months or a year. I mean, the progressive now in there is like night and day from what it, you know, you used to kind of have to disable it and like leave it there in the dark. And like, I'm going to only enable it when I want to see. And we had a gizmo wrapped around it where it would like reduce the resolution to a quarter res so you could kind of preview it. Now it's just like, you just leave the node in the tree and just hang out with
it. And let it go.
Fine. Yeah, exactly. It just, it lives in your comp and it's not, it's no different than, you know, the regular scanline render, except that it's 20,000 times better.
Well, it's ray tracing.
Yeah, exactly.
Ray tracing is a trick. So I think it's really awesome. And Vlado mentioned to me, you know, like I said, we're recording this before the announcement, but we'll put it out after the announcement. He said, you know, we're going to get ready for SIGGRAPH and we're going to talk about this. And I said, he's like, well, he's like, we need to get some information, just get people informed about it, how people use it, what people are using it for. And I said, well, why don't I just get Grant Miller on? And he goes, that'd be amazing. And goes, because you can exactly tell people what they're doing it for. One of the things I find very interesting, Lon and I visit tons of studios. They always ask about V-Ray for Houdini, but I think what would be as great is for people to say, oh, right, I can do that with it, or I can do this with it. What else? You know, like the VR scene file translation may not necessarily be on the top of their mind right now, but that is an important part of the process that can help, especially for the quick jobs, right, where you just don't want to go through a massive pipeline for all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's, if that kind of becomes, you know, your standard caching format, it just, it's really simple to kind of get stuff back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And you can even cache animation through it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can cache a smoke simulation. I mean, it's...
That's right. It's, you put a VDB through it.
Cache anything, right. You know? You know, and some of that stuff, there's obviously other... There's a lot of solutions. You know, you cache an Alembic of stuff. You can cache a, you know, a VDB of stuff. But it's... You can also write out V-Ray mesh files out of Houdini as well. So even if you're kind of in a standard pipe,
right?
You know, it's still... You're not writing like a BGO file and then converting it to a V-Ray mesh after. You're just writing V-Ray mesh natively out of Houdini.
Oh, right.
You know, so like there's a...
Because that was the standard thing that I was used to way back in the day is that people would write out BGO files
and then out convert of Houdini,
and then we would use the V-Ray mesh to BGO or BGO to V-Ray mesh converter that took BGOs.
So it's, I mean, it's just, you're just kind of skipping, you know, and you're skipping steps that you don't need. And then each of those steps that you skip is artist time that you're saving. It's, you know, a task that you don't have to remember to do.
Right.
Or if, even if it's automated, it's something that doesn't have to break, you know, it's like, or something you don't even have to just wait for, you know? So all of that stuff is really great.
So you guys mentioned you were a small studio. So how long have you been with the studio?
So I've been there for, I think, 9 years, eight or 9 years now. We've been in business for, I want to say 13 or 14.
Okay.
So we've been around for a while, but we started off as a one man crew with, you know, no kind of outside investment or anything like that. So we've really, the only way we've grown is just by doing good work and not being weirdos. So yeah, I came on board, and then, yeah, my business partner and I, David Levensfeld, have just kind of worked together and grown the company.
And what was it? Was it always started? What was the, you know, was just a small boutique store?
Yeah. I mean, we started off in music videos, back in the day. We had David worked out of a cubicle, at a production company called DNA. And, you know, just did like two music videos a week and three music videos a week, and then got another helper because he needed to do five music videos a week.
Yeah. And then, was it just mostly just
like quick After Effects and like quick, you know, you know, just little, I mean, back in, when we were making 5 music videos a week and now we make 5 music videos a year. It seems like.
Bigger budgets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's like the budgets really kind of have fluctuated in that business a ton. It was, you know, it was gangbusters for a while and then it went away entirely. And now with YouTube coming back, I mean, you know, your monetization on that stuff really is a completely valid way to kind of get some revenue.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, so it's, and they're fun jobs. It's just a little soul crushing sometimes, the turnarounds.
Yeah. Like, but you guys are doing music videos for the biggest names in music right now, like Taylor Swift.
Right? Yeah.
And you do a lot of her work, right?
We do. So we've done every one of her videos since the first one we did was, what was it? We've done Wildest Dreams, Out of the Woods, Bad Blood, Blank Space, I think was the first one that we did. Okay. Yeah, that was the first job. But she's great to work with. It's like not, it's, you know, you have clients that kind of, especially in the music video business, that, you know, don't really want to show up, don't really want to put the work in, like, and she just, I'm going to run barefoot through the forest in New Zealand and just like in the cold just and just be miserable and just, you know, dump in this mud pool. Like, she's all about it.
So,
and
she seems like very creative.
Yeah. And she's, it's, you know, a lot of the concepts are hers and, you know, awesome. It's, she really gets into it and really kind of respects the process.
How much, how much does she interact, with the post creative as well?
We're sending her notes. Our longtime collaborator, Joseph Kahn, directs a lot of those, all of those videos. And he's very involved in, you know, in the post process. But, you know, she is as well. And she gives good notes and has opinions on how stuff should be and, and ideas and stuff. So,
yeah, I know it's really great. And her videos are obviously a very high production value. Right. And what you guys are doing is clearly really interesting. And
that, yeah, they're amazing.
They're amazing videos. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I really
there's no holds barred. Like, it's
absurd.
Yeah,
it's an onslaught to get those things across the finish line. You know.
Yeah,
and it feels like every 10 seconds is a whole new set, a whole new scene.
Yeah,
right.
And you're not. Yeah, it's, you know, a normal music video, you kind of come, you have like 3 or 4 setups that you kind of come back to and cut back and forth between. Yeah. And like you watch any of those, and it's just nonstop different stuff. All that, we're in a graveyard. We're in a, you know, you're just like, stop changing sets. Just hang out for a minute.
Just hang out for a minute.
Aren't you tired?
We were joking because, you know, when we make a new product page, because this is going to have to become a new product page, and we have, you know, V-Ray Fooding, we were joking about Vlado's quote for it would be, look what we made you do.
V-Ray for Houdini, look what you made me do.
Yeah. because it's really awesome. And it really, the other thing that's really awesome is the fact that you worked so close with Andre, and I knew how proud he was when he saw the work that he had helped you guys with, and he saw that turn into something that was huge. And it made a big difference, and it certainly invigorates the team to work on those kind of things. So I know that they're very appreciative of seeing the results of their work up there.
Honestly. I mean, it literally wouldn't have been possible without him.
Right.
So like we would have just, I don't know, we would have just gone back to rubber snakes, I guess. That was plan B.
Plan B. So it's really, I think it's, you know, I can speak for Andre a little bit when I said he's very proud of seeing that on the screen. So, so now you've grown. You said you've gone from small one guy doing a little bit of After Effects to now getting over 100 people.
Yeah.
100 people?
Yeah.
How many offices do you guys have?
Just here in New York.
Okay.
And our New York office is really kind of just starting to get off the ground. So I think there's only like seven people there.
Okay.
But we're on kind of the person every 2 months club right now. So, you know, it's growing pretty steadily.
And you guys are doing work that's, I mean, music videos, yes, you're still doing a lot of that, but you do television, you guys are doing film, advertising,
commercials,
like a little bit of everything, exactly. Right?
And that's kind of been our whole MO the whole time. I mean, I think the more fingers we can have kind of in the more pies, it really helps to even out the roller coaster of our industry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you're doing three big films and nothing else, and one of those films gets put on hold, it's a real problem, you know. We're kind of able to, you know, we do smaller portions in bigger movies, like we did, you know, shots on Geostorm or something like that, mm-hmm. but we're not doing, you know, an entire Transformers movie where it's going to bankrupt the studio if we kind of put it on hold. You know, we kind of try to take our projects, you know.
You know, I meant to ask you, because I saw it on the website a while back where it said you guys worked on Get Out.
Yeah.
Which I finally just got around to seeing, and it was pretty amazing. That was a really good movie. What did you get? I don't know if you could talk about it.
Yeah, we did everything on it.
Did you?
We were the primary. Yeah, we were the sole visual effects vendor on Get Out.
I have something I'm going to talk about, but go ahead, keep going.
Yeah. So you know, the sunken place. You know, all of the fire in the film. A lot of like the knives and blood and just all sorts of stuff. Right. And I mean, it was a great crew to work on. You know, I wish the movie had been a little less successful because ILM's doing Jordan's next movie. But you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I heard him on another podcast talking about how they didn't use any CG and how it was so much better done practically.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The cat's out of the bag now.
And
cat's
so, out of the bag. Yeah, he's talking about it's so much better when it's all practical and it will, you know, we said we used maybe a little bit of CG.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, practical is better. Practical is better, which really frustrates me.
I think it's a common kind of misconception sometimes. Like you hear people bag on CG all the time, and yet there's so much CG that just goes completely unnoticed.
Right.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's because good CG is unnoticed.
Yeah.
Bad CG is noticed.
And then people think, oh, CG sucks. And it's like, actually, no, everything in this whole set is CG, and you have been ignoring it for, you know, the entire film.
But that's true, and that's from the audience perspective. But if you look at it from like the Jordan Peele's perspective, and I don't want to rag on him at all because I think he's an amazing director, and I loved Get Out, and I want him to continue to be a successful, movie maker and director. But he, from a lot of people from the production side, seem to bag on CG because I think they seem to dislike the fact that it just goes into this black box and sometimes the frames come out and they feel like they have less control of it that they do when they're in production.
Yeah. I mean, when you're there on set, you know, and I do a ton of on-set supervision, you're looking at something and you know what it looks like.
Right.
And if that's how the glass exploded, then that's how it exploded and you'd be fine with it.
Right.
And you get over into CG and everyone has an opinion suddenly on how the glass should explode. And you end up with something, you know, especially on like a commercial production where the glass is exploding in such a ridiculous, fantastic, absurd way.
Because everyone's had
everyone down the line is trying to keep their job and get some notes in.
Right.
And it's not healthy. It doesn't make for a better product. You know, like no one's watching that weird glass explosion and thinking, oh yeah, now I want to buy some Coca-Cola.
Right.
You know, it's like you're just watching it and thinking that was weird. Why did it break that way and hang in the air for so long? And where's the gravity? And and it's, why is it so sparkly?
Yep.
And it's, whereas if you really, you know, just let us do our job, we'll make glass that looks real and you'll be happy and it'll be fine. You know? And I think that's really the paradigm shift.
And I'm not sort of necessarily knocking the idea of practical being, I think practical does definitely have a place because if you want it to look that real is real, right?
Yeah. Well, the new Jurassic did a great job of kind of mixing the two, you know,
but they did it in the first Jurassic Park too.
Exactly.
You know? They used a mechanical, T-Rex and a CG T-Rex, and you can't tell which one is which.
That's how it should be.
And that's the way it should be. And that's a testament to both of those crafts.
Yes.
Because if you can't tell which is which and you just accept this as a T-Rex, then you've won.
Then you did it. Yeah.
You did it, right? And that is really good.
And those kind of collaborations are how it should be. Absolutely. But instead of that, we're often kind of met with a lot of resistance on set to like, oh, well, if you build this and I'll build that, you know, mm-hmm. you're taking stuff that I'm trying to do or don't, you know, it's, and there's like, we have a really good relationship with the art director that we work with on a lot of these Taylor music mm-hmm. videos where mm-hmm. he'll build the stuff that he, you know, he'll say, how much of this should I build and what are you guys going to cover?
Right.
And that conversation just is missed on a lot of other productions.
Yeah.
And it wastes a ton of money.
Now, you know, I have another theory, and I wanted to hear your opinion on it. You've worked on set quite a bit. I've been on set quite a bit myself. But I'd go on tangents. Virtual production.
You do?
I do. I'm a tangent.
This
man.
Whole conversation is a tangent. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even know we were starting.
Yeah, we started
an hour ago.
30 yeah. minutes ago. So virtual production. The thing that I think is interesting about virtual production is it could help solve this communication problem.
Yep.
You now, if you're, the way that I envision virtual production in the long run is a lot of the CG actually gets done within the virtual production, right? So you might have seen something we did with the construct thing where you're live ray tracing, right?
Yeah.
So imagine that taken to fruition where you're not completely doing it live, but you're pretty close to it.
Yeah.
At that point, you have a virtual world that you're dealing with, but you can put real production tools in that virtual world. And instead of handing the lighting to some guy who's straight out of Full Sail CG school to say, here, light this shot as good as the DP did it, just let the DP do the lighting in virtual production. That sort of gives the DP gives him the reins back.
Yeah, it's not so black box anymore.
Right. So if you give the reins back to the DP says, oh, here's how I'll do it. This sounds, you know, this really is great. I know I did a car commercial years ago for Scion, and one of the directors, who was really an interesting guy, he said it was an all CG car commercial, but they hired a DP for it.
Yeah.
Like a practical DP. And he said, who did a lot of car commercials. And he says, your job is, you know, we'll pay you directors, you know, a DP rate, but you're going to be here and you're going to tell them how to light it the way you would light it.
Yeah.
And so we'd learned so much from that guy and it looked so much better. And he got really invested in the CG, which is something he never thought he would ever be invested in.
Yeah.
And saw the look and he was like, he was getting really, really excited about it. And he started to learn more and more about our process. And then by the end, he was like, all right, okay, I get it. He says, you know what? If I were to shoot this for real on film, because I like to shoot on film certain things for cars, I would have used this stock film. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy some short ends of that stock, and I'm going to develop it and give you guys the grain of that so you guys can match it so it looks like the same. So he had all these ideas in his head of what we could do, and it made him part of the process. And I think that virtual production could also be something that really sort of makes CG exciting to the production crew in some way.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you can go to set and actually see what it is that we're doing. You can see behind the curtain.
Yes.
You know, and that's what people are missing currently. And that process, you know, even if it's as smooth as it can possibly be, is still a turnaround, you know, on a shot. You know, you're not there live. You can't, oh, let's make this a little brighter, a little darker. You know, at best, you're sending three postings with a bright, brighter, and brightest, mm-hmm. you know? Right. And it's, you're not really dialing stuff in. You're not really able to kind of make the tweaks that on set, you would just be on the lighting board and say 20, 30, 40, up, 50, up, 32.
Yeah.
That's where I want it.
And
I think
the closer you get to, you know, being able to see through that virtual production frame going, yeah, that's, we all agree that that's what this thing should look like. And then it's sweetening after that, right? We're going to go finish it and, you know, do the rest of the nuances, or maybe we'll get to the point where you can just render it straight there. But I also like the fact in virtual production, like a DP can get in there and not have to spend a whole lot of time figuring out where they're going to plug stuff in. right?
Like, it's also very easy for us to move, you know, 10 by 10 light.
Exactly. Light.
Real quick.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very light for us in like, CG.
How are we going to move this? Where are we going to plug it in?
We can hang it wherever. We can put it 40 feet in the air.
The irony is that I spoke back at DD. I was speaking to one of our supervisors, our VFX supervisor, who used to be a miniature DP, right? And his name is Eric Nash. And he wanted to learn about the lighting process in CG. And this is back on iRobot. So it was years and years ago, right? Still, the lighting process was very slow before GI or anything else, right? And so I was showing him how to do it. And he was like, oh my God, this is painful. That's how slow this is to light in CG, right?
I mean, now you look at it and it's like, we have that experience. Right. You know, our lighters, you're sitting down and, you know, watching RT pretty much real time, unless you've really kind of done something pretty wrong.
Right.
You know, and then tweaking stuff and, you know, seeing frames. It's like, it's night and day from even, I mean, I remember when it was terrible.
Right.
It was like, you had to, you know, you couldn't turn anything on and you're like, I need 3 lights in the scene, that's probably it, and like, let's, you know, and now it's just like,
yeah, you just
make that rec light huge, I don't care,
right.
Yeah,
well, his
make it look good.
Eric's analogy is like, if I were to do the lighting that we were doing back then practically, it'd be like me setting up a scene, turning off all the lights, placing them randomly where I think they should be, waiting an hour and then turning on the lights.
Turning them all on.
Like, yeah, that's not quite right. Turn them off, move them again, guess again.
Yep.
Wait an hour, turn on the lights. It's like, wow, yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. But at least in that scenario, you have light bouncing for you.
At least you had bounce. Yeah.
Here you have to, if you have light bouncing, you need to put a light there and shine it up.
Yep.
Like that. Yeah. That's not fun.
No, that's not fun at all. But yeah, that's, it is kind of cool how that's changed. So what do you say, like, you know, in the last, you said you were there 9 years?
Yep.
So in the last 9 years, how have you seen your job change and evolve with the studio?
I came to the studio from video games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I didn't know really anything about visual effects.
Huh.
And just kind of would go home at night and, like, learn how to do my job for the next day. Like...
Awesome.
Oh, we need a camera track.
Hold on.
What are those two words together in a sentence mean? You know, kind of a situation. So yeah, I mean, I learned a lot of, you know, I knew stuff for modeling and, you know, I'm an artist and had done, you know, stuff like that.
What video game stuff were you working on?
I was at EA on Medal of Honor.
Oh, okay.
And then I was at a Naked Sky doing Destroy All Humans. And then, I was at a little studio called Meteor that actually canned the game that we were working on. And that was, you know, an artist that was working for me there went back to Ingenuity and said, hey, you should get this guy.
Awesome.
So it's just, and I look at back at the decision and it was just made with kind of such flippancy, like, sure, I'll, you know, I was going to take a couple months off, but I guess I'll go do that. And now it's like my entire career, like my entire career was based on like a,
give it a try.
Hey, give it a shot. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. It's not video games. We'll see.
Yeah. Maybe it's fun.
Yeah.
So much better. Yeah. It takes forever to make a video game.
Oh, you know, yeah.
We turn a music video around in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and it's like out there, tons of people are seeing it. You know, like I did a wolf this last Super Bowl the night before the cutoff for turning in commercials.
Wow.
Like they called and they were like, hey, you know, we've got this wolf in a commercial that we can't use. We need you to do a CG one that looks just kind of the same vibe by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, how do you do that?
I mean, luckily we had done the wolves in the Out of the Woods video are CG.
Oh, right.
Except for the, you know, kind of close-ups. They're the worst trained wolves I've ever seen.
Right.
They just ran off into the woods in the middle of
wolves
the
night. Like, goodbye. Yeah.
They're like
not
wild
reliable.
Animals.
They're it's weird. They're weirdly unreliable animals. Not very into instructions. Kind of like myself.
I heard that someone was telling me there was some wolves in some movie they were working on. There's some trained wolves, and it's like not trained.
No,
not trained, and the trainers are just as weird as the
with a trainer is like, well, that's what the wolf wants to do right now. So we just have to let it do that. And then hopefully it'll want to do what it's, I mean, it's the same with like, same with big cats, you know, like you work right. with any like, or, you know, a lion or like anything like that.
2 year olds.
Yeah. It's like, well, the lion wants to lay down. So
yeah.
What can we just do that instead? Like, no, I need the lion to do interesting lion things like roar.
Right.
No one wants a sleepy lion in there.
Yeah, working with animals is...
That's the worst.
Yeah.
But now we just make them in CG.
Right.
Yeah. Like we just quit that as an industry, it seems like. Like almost all commercial productions especially, it's like it's just a, you know, because otherwise PETA just up in arms.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's better for everyone. An animal gets to hang out in Africa where it belongs. We get to, right. you know, make some money doing furry creatures.
Right.
Everyone wins.
Yeah, and it's probably get a better result.
You get an absolutely better result.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as long as you do a good job, which...
Which is more and more possible.
It's so much more accessible than it used to be. I mean, we wouldn't be a company if it weren't for the software and the progression of that software and, you know, in so much as what we can accomplish as a studio. Because it's, you know, when we've always punched way above our weight in terms of, you know, we're a 12 person place, but we're doing stuff that looks, you know, great. And now we're a 30 person place and we're doing stuff that's greater, you know, and it's like now we're 100 people and we're, you know, so it's interesting to, you know, kind of look at the tools that we use and really like appreciate that they're kind of enabling that, you know?
Sure.
And that's, you know, to kind of bring it back, like that's where the V-Ray for Houdini stuff kind of we're so excited about, because, you know, it enables this whole other kind of host of very fine grain control over shaders and very, you know, kind of much more kind of data driven, you know, networks that are able to accomplish a lot of, you know, really complex and interesting visual effects that we really just wouldn't be able to do as a studio otherwise.
I think what's also interesting is that because of the way you guys seem to have evolved opportunistically, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We don't have sales really. Like we have a guy who kind of does it a little bit, but it's not like we have a, you know, massive sales team that are kind of going around and managing our social media and like we're spending a ton on parties in Cannes and, you know, it's just, these guys did a good job on my last thing. You should use them.
Right.
And then, you know, we do a good job for both those guys and then they tell four of their friends and it goes from there.
But I think that's a really cool, and I think you guys seem to be doing the same thing the way you treat your solutions, software solutions, right? You're like, oh, you know what would be cool? Maybe if we should use this. And because a lot of other, you know, bigger studios, they are like, we are set in this pipeline. We are a Maya house. We're a Genie house. We're a blah, blah, blah.
No.
And that doesn't seem to, you're like, nope, whatever works will work for us, but we'll, and then whatever we can glue together is going to help as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's really, you know, the glue is what we really kind of bring to the table as a studio. You know, it's like, it's, you guys can use whatever software, you know, use anything you want. I don't, you know, we have guys that still use 3D Studio Max. Mm-hmm. You know, our environment artist, Jack, and I both love Modo and do a ton of work in Modo. Mm-hmm. One of our Houdini artists also does, you know, work in Blender for any time he needs to model, but it's, you know, as long as it dumps an Olympic out, like I don't care. Right. I don't care where it comes from. You know, I mean, you want to use some sort of weird whatever, like it's fine. You know, so yeah, it's been easy for us to kind of adopt, you know, Marvelous Designer or Substance Painter or, you know, kind of any of these kind of new, and, you know, Substance Painter changed the way we work. I mean, it's now everything pretty much is just baseline hero asset because it's so easy to just throw materials onto something that look really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the auto unwrap stuff in Houdini changed the way we, you know, kind of look at what a asset build is. It's like you download kind of a meh model from Turbo Squid, auto unwrap it, slap some shaders on it in Substance Painter, and you have something that looks like you spent a really long time on it and you really spent an hour, you know?
Right.
Awesome. Good trick.
And it's
pro tips.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be possible if that weren't the case, you know?
Right.
And like, and the nice part about you know, doing PBR now with even, you know, with Mari or with Substance Banner is that it's going to travel, you know? So before we had V-Ray for Houdini, at least we could still load, you know, into Mantra the same maps and load into V-Ray the same maps and, you know, and kind of know that it's going to be
we're doing
consistent
result. We're doing the same thing. In fact, I'm writing a blog post about it because, like, our customers come from all over the place, right? All different kinds of customers. So everyone's like, I need this. And I'm like, well, how are we going to make that work for you? So, for example, you know, we're not a PBR shader, but it wasn't that hard. Well, it was hard, but we found a way to add metalness to as an idea to V-Ray. Right?
Yeah.
So now you can add metalness as a shader just so that we can support, much more directly support the Substance Designer output that
works.
Which is kind of cool because that allows everyone to just use that process because it's become so popular. So popular.
Well, it's, I mean, it went from 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it really.
And it makes sense now because people want to have they want to have a real time and a, you know,
that's
a ray trace pipeline.
That was our motivation as well. You know, every asset that we build now is basically kind of Unreal ready.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, in terms of, you know, that it all has kind of, you know, unless it's something kind of special, it has, you know, the same standard shader is on every object in our scene and it all just is driven, you know, from either Painter or Mari.
Right.
And the, you know, the bulk of the look dev really happens on, you know, on the Substance Painter side. And, you know, when you get back into V-Ray, it's like, it's, you know, it's pretty one-to-one. And even before the metalness was added, it's, you know, it's not like rocket science to kind of get that stuff to match
transit,
pretty one-to-one.
We got to get V-Ray for Unreal in your hands too. I just realized that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you looked into that at all?
I watched his keynote on it.
Okay.
And was very excited. And it's one of those things where.
Cause it's very similar to what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
Just outputting your VR scene files and it's there.
Yeah. It's one of those deals where we have this project currently and, terms of kind of getting V-Ray for Houdini kind of into our pipe. And that's kind of the next, you know, that's the horizon is, well, we have this now, let's just do it all, you know, do it all in real time. Cause the animate, like it makes so much sense for Previz, that package. It's insane. Like the workflow to, you know, go from storyboards to completed short film in Unreal is the best workflow that I've ever seen. You know, it's easy collaboration on, you know, the scene. You can have a guy doing effects, you can have a guy doing animation, you can have a guy doing like layout and sound, all working on the same, like they've really kind of done just a fantastic job of solving those problems. And then to be able to kind of take that and do an actual real render of it, it's like, it's, you know, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And then especially if you're able to take a, you know, great looking explosion from Houdini or great looking, you know, real solid rig from Maya that's got a ton of great, you know, tech in it. And, you know, it's like you can combine all those elements and, you know, just be watching that stuff.
Yeah. I think that's also a really good, I mean, you know, I was talking about virtual production. I see, you know, real time engines are going to be the vehicles for virtual production. In fact, they already are. In a lot of ways, and I just find it interesting the how much that industry has changed, where real time is not just about games anymore. It's
no, it's like my old job is just kind of chasing me down.
Right. Yeah.
You're gonna do this eventually.
Yeah. But I think it's well. Other thing I like about it is, you know, if you can look at it in real time. It looks really great, but you still have the ability to render it in V-Ray inside of that thing and you can offline render that.
Yeah. And it, you know, you watch that demo and it's, I mean, it's a very close match. And I think that's the important thing as well. You know, like you're not, it's kind of, I kind of equate it to, you know, Substance Painter in a sense. It's like, I'm making, you know, this, I'm making decisions about this and then I'm going to take it back to, you know, V-Ray and it's going to look the same. You know, it's the same in Unreal. I'm making decisions about the lighting in this set. If those aren't, you know, if those aren't at all accurate in V-Ray, it's a, you know, what are you even doing? But they are, you know, it is a pretty tight match. And that's really kind of where the appeal of that stuff comes from. Cause then you can, you know, you can dial that stuff in actual real time instead of waiting a couple seconds. And
sure.
You know, you can move the light around until you get the highlight that you want and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are some of your, over the last 9 years, what are some of your favorite projects that you think you've done?
Oh, man.
Because you've done, obviously, you do tons of projects per year. There are a lot of very short runs. And
yeah, I mean, we really, we do a lot of, there's a lot of stuff that comes through the studio. I think because we have kind of so many, you know, different things that we have our fingers in, you know, there's stuff that comes through that I don't even see. There's stuff that comes through that, you know, really kind of consumes my whole situation. So, yeah, I mean, we did, you know, all the Taylor Swift music videos are all great. You know, I think that we did an invisible car for her Bad Blood video that we've gotten since as a reference for what we wanted the invisible car to look like, which was fun. Okay. You know, it's like, that's it, like we, and then they were like, oh, you guys did that. Okay, great. Well, we just want that then. Right. And we actually did a spoof, for a television show of the Bad Blood video, which we also did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we did like the spoof version of a video that we had done the visual effects on.
Oh,
so
that must've been fun.
All that's all cool. The I get to see
that. So that was fun. I mean, it's like Get Out was great. It's great great to work on an Oscar winning film. That production was, you know, everyone on that team was a dream to kind of work with you know, super, super nice.
I just love the fact that films like that get made now, because I think, you know, there's nice to see that, sure, the Marvel films are a lot of fun and everything, but it's nice to see innovative, in the, you know, original thought films, provocative films getting made, that are, getting big success.
Yeah.
You know, like Get Out and what's the other one?
Quiet Place is awesome. So I watched those back to back.
We did, the writers of Quiet Place, we did their first film, Nightlight.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, kind of, it was great to see them go on and kind of do Quiet Place. And, you know, it's interesting to kind of watch that progression. You know, it's, they're given an opportunity, they're given such a great opportunity to do that film. And it's such a good idea. And you, I don't think, have that unless you have an audience for it. You know, it's like, you don't have a movie like Get Out unless people are smart enough to like a movie like Get Out. And it's kind of a hopeful thing for me on a humanity level that it did so well. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, I think,
cause you don't, I mean, you're right. Like the Marvel movies are great. The Marvel movies are fun, but you don't want to only have that as the kind of sole source of entertainment. Like you still want something that, you know, puts a little bit of thought in.
I think because there's two different ways of marketing things, right? Obviously you've got the big, you know, Marvel engine, that has a big marketing push and a whole plan as to its universe and where it's going and how that's being driven, et cetera.
Totally.
And then you've got a much cheaper film, like Get Out.
Okay. You lost some zeros, a couple zeros on the budget.
And that film happens to get the attention through social media and recommendations. And that's the thing that's really nice about now. Social media can really push something to people. It's like, you got to pay attention to this. You
know? Yeah.
And also what I really liked about Get Out is because it's such a surprise movie. No one spoiled it forever.
Yeah.
You know, no one was saying,
that's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was a huge amount of respect out there for everyone who watched it, not to spoil it or give it away or anything else.
Cause it took me a long time to actually get around to seeing it, because I'm not usually, everybody was like, oh, it's kind of a thriller, like a horror film, and I'm like, ah, horror doesn't really,
not my cup of tea,
not my thing. And then this, I wouldn't classify this as a horror film at all.
Well, like, you know, it's a psychological
thriller.
It's maybe a psychological thriller and a stance on social, you know, status of this country.
Yeah,
Under the guise of a horror film.
Well, I mean, and honestly, even the same with Quiet Place.
It's like saying Jaws is a monster movie.
Right? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, same with Quiet Place. Like, I was like, I don't want to watch this movie. It's going to be scary as crap.
Yeah. And like, then it was like, oh my God, this is...
It's more Jurassic Park than, you know...
Right.
Than, you know, Scream or something. Or
yep.
What's the other one I want to see right now is...
The Meg.
No. Lon is so excited for the Meg.
Don't understand.
So I have
pitch me on the Meg.
I have.
I'm so hyped for this.
I have a penchant for
really bad movies.
Really, yeah. Like there's something about going to a movie that you know is going to be just amazingly like just wrong. Like the whole. So years ago, I remember watching the movie The Transporter, also with Jason Statham, and I walked out of that movie, which is absurd, right? It's just an absolutely absurd, but it's a fun watch if you just let it, if you go on the roller coaster ride. And I jokingly, I'm like, this is my favorite movie ever, right? Like, yeah. There's nothing, there's no topping it. And now that the Meg is here, my new joke is that, well, this is going to take over the top spot of Transporter. Because it just,
it makes for some great posters. I will say
the posters are great.
Their advertising is on point. They've got one at Highland and Melrose.
They just did the top down views.
Yeah.
The swimmers.
Did you see that? She says, pleased to eat you.
Yeah. Someone, you know, cashing their check on that one.
I mean, it's Sharknado, right? In a sense.
Yeah, exactly. And those guys are doing all right.
Giant jaws. Let's call it giant jaws.
But I think that's a good point, though. It's like, it kind of gets back to what I was talking about earlier. Like the Sharknado guys, they're making a movie that has visual effects in it. And I guarantee you it's like first pass approvals on a ton of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you get it on the screen and it's done. You know, it's like, I think there's.
Yeah, but
that's not what you want to be doing all the time. You want to do good work and whatever,
but
obviously.
You have a thing where you're saying, I want a shot with a shark falling out of a sky and a person with a chainsaw, and he's ripping the shark down the middle as he's falling out of the sky. Now, that's amazing. And that's no way that's going to look real.
Yeah.
But you're going to laugh your ass off when you see it, or just go, oh my God, that was amazing. Yeah. And that, you know, that's something I would proudly put on my reel.
Yeah.
I would proudly put that on my reel.
I don't know who does the visual effects on that stuff.
Doesn't David Tracy, who's our communications director, I think his wife knows the director of all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I have to figure out.
Sonia's friends with the director.
It's anonymous anonymous content.
I don't know.
Asylum. Yeah. Asylum Studio. Not the visual effects Asylum Studio. There's another Asylum Studio that does a lot of that stuff, I think. They're crazy films.
I'm pretty sure it's all done in Lightwave.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the visual effects for that are all
would not surprise me at all.
Done in Lightwave.
Yeah. I would not be shocked.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of interesting places that you can put CG these days, and a lot of different ways you can put CG into things. And a lot of subtle places and a lot of big places. And I think you guys are really sort of showcasing a lot of that. It's not always about it's CG. It's about how can we make this fun? How can we do this?
It's got to support the story.
Right.
It was a couple of years ago, and I'm going to feel like an idiot if it wasn't you guys that did this. But because I was thinking, well, here's my train of thought. My train of thought is I want to find out, like, does the studio do – like passion projects. You guys work on stuff that's, do you get a chance to work on stuff that's non-commissioned? And if my memory serves me right, there was like a short Power Rangers film from a couple of years ago. That was you guys, right?
Yeah.
And the production value on that was amazing.
So it was a short Power Rangers film?
Yeah. Yeah. There was like a gritty, you know, gritty take on Power Rangers.
Oh, I remember this.
And it got, you know, a fair bit of buzz. We did, you know, big giant fighting robots for it and, you know, all sorts of weird.
There was an actor involved in it, wasn't it?
Vanderbeek.
Yeah, Vanderbeek, that's right.
Yeah, James Vanderbeek.
Yes.
Yep, we did a NASCAR commercial with him too. He's a cool guy. Awesome. And we also ate at the Crab Shack in Daytona, Florida. Joe's Crab Shack. Finest establishment that we could find to eat with the agency and James Vanderbeek.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, it was a really enjoyable job for us. You know, it's
what
cool
motivated
you know, we work with the director, Joseph Kahn. Mm-hmm. You know, he was really kind of wanted to get that idea, I think, out there, you know, and kind of put it into, you know, people's thought that maybe that's an avenue that it could go on. And it had some legs for a bit, but kind of ultimately they made a, you know, the Power Rangers movie that they made, which maybe wasn't as cool, probably, I think. You know, and it, we were in support of that, you know, and we, you know, did it on a dime, and, but it was one of those jobs where we put the money on the screen, you know, it's like, well, this, what's the biggest, coolest robot that we can make in the fastest way possible that we can make it in the cheapest way possible and that we can make it, you know, and it's kind of that stuff that, you know, maybe the bear doesn't have to run through the stream because that's really expensive. Maybe he can just run through the field. You know what I mean? Like it's being involved in those decisions and being a part of the team.
If you give yourself some creative restraints, you get the,
you get a ton of results in turn, you know,
and save a ton of money.
And you save a ton of money.
Right.
I mean, and I think that's, you know, getting back to the virtual production stuff, that's really, that's where I see the biggest benefit of it, is that you bring visual effects back to being part of the team.
Right.
And I think there's certainly films that, you know, do treat it like that. Like I know on the latest, you know, Star Wars, when they're building out the interior of the ship, they're just building out a styrofoam to match a 3D model so that they can light the set, but then replace it with the, you know, with the CG. And it's like, they do a really good job, I think, of treating post as a part of the crew.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of films that treat it as post and not as just a partner.
Yeah. When Tron was another thing that I worked on, and I remember when they did the test for Tron.
Yeah. That's how a lot of that stuff happens.
Yeah, it was more like let's show what Tron could look like today, you know, and it was a different way of looking at it. I thought the look was beautiful, the test was beautiful. I worked on the movie. I thought the movie looked really nice. The story needed a lot of help. Obviously, we have a lot of issues there, but the look was definitely solid.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still the hallmark of what that look is, you know, like you get that reference. I just want it to look like Tron all the time. But yeah, I mean, that's what it takes to get something off the ground now.
Yeah.
You know, it's used to, you had a,
or the
you
Deadpool
know, you
thing.
Had an,
we talked about that before.
Exactly. You had an idea, you had a, you know, you had a script, you had maybe some concept art or whatever. Now it's like, you really need something like Leviathan or like, you know, the Ruin short that Wes Ball did, or, you know, it's like stuff like any of, you know, any of the shorts from, you know, the District 9, like just all of that stuff is what gets those movies made. And maybe, you know, maybe we didn't get to see Ruin, but we got to saw, you get to see Maze Runner instead, you know? So
you
it's
will
like,
see Ruined. He was on this podcast, by the way.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So he came on and he talked about Ruined. And that apparently he has to finish the three Maze Runners, and then he can do Ruins.
Oh, and then he gets to do that's great. That's great. I would take that deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because
he's an amazing guy. Amazing guy. So bright. Really knows his CG, obviously.
Yeah.
And so,
well, I mean, I think that's going to be more common as well.
Right. Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Kaczynski was the first director I worked on who asked me what my noise threshold was on a shot, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that was looked really clean. What was your noise threshold on that? And I'm like, yeah. Didn't hear that from Alex Poyas. So, but yeah, so it is really, really cool. Anyway, listen, I don't want to take too much of your time because I actually have to go somewhere, but it's been awesome to have you on and continue to work with you. And you guys have really been amazing partners for us.
Likewise.
And
absolutely.
And, you know, whatever other ideas you have, you want to push the barriers of what's possible, we want to be there with you guys to help you and figure out what we can do to make that happen.
Couldn't do it without you.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Cheers.